Hello and welcome to the Avery Forums podcast for Monday, the 7th of November. It's a new month, and joining me for this new month is assistant editor Steve Withers.
Choose a big f***ing television.
News editor Mark Hodgkinson.
Opium suppositories. Ideal for your purposes. Slow release.
That's Welsh, you madman.
I know. Yeah. Bring you down gradual. Custom f***ing design for your needs.
Yeah, whatever, Mark. And audio reviewer Ed Selly.
We would have injected vitamin C if only they'd made it illegal.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. I was so tempted to do a quote there because I think I'm the only person that could do it in the correct accent, but we'll move on swiftly. Is anybody else, you know, this year, when you're looking at just basically what's on the television, what's on the news and all the rest of it, does anybody else feel like it's something like you would get at the start of a movie about an apocalypse?
Yeah, you know, pretty much. The clips I've started, on before I've started to look at large muscle cars with no form of electronic fuel injection or anything like that. I need to be mobile post the event.
Seriously, I mean, watching the news recently, you would think you were watching the start of a film that was going all about post-apocalyptic. Say that with a Scottish accent. I guess we'll know by Tuesday if we're going to hell in a handcart or not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really hoping the aliens do invade soon, because we could do with a breath of fresh air, really, coming on the news.
Have you seen the giant meteor 2016 bumper sticker doing the rounds?
No.
You know, it's like it's a giant meteor 2016 because we deserve nothing better. That's a message I can get behind. I
mean, we are morally bankrupt as a species, aren't we, really? Our time on this planet is over now. It's time we should just pack up and leave.
Yeah, there is that. But there's also the flip side. I mean, it was 114 years since Hibs won the Scottish Cup, and they did that this year. And then this last week, if you listen to this on Monday, when the podcast goes out, the Chicago Cubs won the World Series after 108 years of waiting. I mean, that's perseverance. The other thing is, Back to the Future nearly got that right. They had predicted 2015 that the Cubs would win, which that's weird in itself that they're making predictions like that in the movies. And I guess the scary thing is as well that The Simpsons predicted a President Trump.
Yeah, although that does mean that Lisa Simpson is due to be the 46th president of the United States.
Compared to the two current choices, I would take Lisa Simpson.
A 2D drawing of an 8-year-old.
Yeah. Yep. Well, as opposed to a 3D orange 8-year-old.
Well, yeah. Okay, point taken. We'll
give
see
me the yellow. Give me the yellow 8-year-old anytime.
Fair enough. I don't really know what to say to that. I'm just going to weep gently.
Okay, so, well, Ed weeps gently. Mark's going to tell us what we can win competition-wise. Take a deep breath, Mark.
Lots and lots and lots of prizes. Right, current competition.
Was that a Laura prize?
A Laura prizes. Three copies of Level Up on Blu-ray, and that's open to all members until the 9th of November. You could win a copy of Lucifer on season one, and there are three up for grabs. You could win Twilight's Last Gleaming on Blu-ray, and there's three copies of that also, and that's open to all members until the 12th of November. And then we've got Preacher, which I've just started watching, actually, which is excellent. Three copies of that up for grabs also, as on Blu-ray and open to all members until the 13th of November also. And we've got Batman, The Return of the Caped Crusaders on Blu-ray. Three copies of that. There's a theme here. All members until the 14th of November. Family Guy Season 16 on DVD. Again, three copies up for grabs, open to all members. And that's the 14th of November closing. Independence Day, Resurgence Day, Resurgence on 3D Blu-ray. Once again, three copies up for grabs. All members, 16th of November. I didn't see this one. We've got Cares on Blu-ray, and that's open to all members until the 17th of November. Once again, three copies. I believe that's it. Oh, legal tagline, listen up. All competitions open to residents of the UK, Ireland and the Isle of Man.
Any previous competition winners, Mark?
We've got Final Fight Guy, all one word, Papa, and Chris Gall, all won copies of Race on DVD. Al Guna, obviously an Arsenal fan, won The Governor on Blu-ray, plus the autobiography. And Light Fran won two tickets to see Buried Child, starring Ed Harris, in the West End.
Okay. Commiserations to Heavy Fran there for not winning. So,
yeah, congratulations to our winners. And moving on swiftly, so we've already talked about the end of the world. Brexit seems like such a small potato when you look at what's going on over the pond. But the Brexit effect, it might not happen now. Mightn't it? No?
It's very complicated. I think on balance, we'd have to assume, what was it, 404 out of 600 and however many constituencies are adjudged to have voted leave on a majority level. So at least a goodly portion of those MPs are going to have one eye on their electability prospects, and probably in the event of a vote, go alongside it. I think there's definitely going to be a level of greater scrutiny. There's definitely, I imagine, going to be a level of delay. It's got to the stage where I have a £10 note in my back pocket and I'm contemplating wandering off to a bookmaker's and actually putting £10 down that the UK is not the first EU member to invoke Article 50.
I might not be able to have that.
Quite interesting odds on that. But I think, obviously, I think it's worth pointing out that I think the press is generating a bit more hype and fury than actually strictly needs to be the case. I don't think
never this the media alters, doing that.
Well, absolutely. I don't think this alters the absolute outcome.
I don't think it can. I think it'd take brave MPs to go against the will of the British people.
Take suicidal MPs.
I think so. One of the side effects, interesting side effect, was that the pound jumped up a whole percentage point.
Yeah, it's very annoying. I was about to drop in a dollar invoice. I might have to wait to see if we can have another plummet, to be honest.
Give it till Monday.
Wait to see what the Supreme Court says, and then you can do it.
I can't wait that long. But I'll wait until someone says something really stupid and tanks it again. So, and then hopefully it can pick up in time for me to invoice you guys.
I guess the interesting thing is, I mean, you're looking at the currency, basically it has plummeted since the referendum. Up until now, it seems obvious that obviously companies are tied into financial periods. They're not going to suddenly put prices up, but we're getting to the point in the year, getting to the end of quarter four, it could be that we start the new year with some pretty major price hikes.
I would have thought so.
We're definitely going to get that. For a number of reasons, not just the fact that they obviously pre-hedge their currency exposures years in advance, so those will be rolling off now. But also, I think, because manufacturers are just going to think, well, if they're dumb enough to vote for this, let's just f*** them over royally with some massive price hikes. Because I would, if I was a manufacturer, I would just use Brexit as an excuse to absolutely screw this country into the ground in terms of prices.
There are some point when the euro came in, that happened, didn't it? We had loads of random price hikes.
This is true. But that equally, in terms of our very specific little corner of the earth, I was talking to, actually I was having a conversation with two owners of British audio companies, quite unexpectedly. There's stuff just flying in and out of the house. And both of them are actually going to take this opportunity to become a little bit more affordable relative to everybody else. I mean, don't get me wrong, they can't completely ignore the changes. It's not like every single component and every single material they use is only available in the UK. But nonetheless, it's a bit of a weird one, this, because actually a certain clutch of brands that we consider to be, you know, relatively premium and relatively pricey will actually take this opportunity to become, by comparison, slightly less premium and pricey.
They've got to, Ed. I mean, you know, despite what Steve said at the beginning of this, if he was a manufacturer, he'd rip us off. Well, actually, you know, the problem is with a lower currency, the pound's worth less. There's less for the consumer to spend. The consumer then becomes more cagey about what they're actually going to spend their money on. And if you are a manufacturer of any goods and rely on the UK, you're going to have to look at your pricing models very, very carefully, because if you're overpriced, you're in deep trouble.
Mm. Oh, yeah, no question. We'll see how it goes. One person who was, I don't think he'd be too upset for me to actually name him, Lawrence Armstrong, who runs Henley Designs. They do Project and a couple of other, it's relatively, you know, smaller imported brands, but nonetheless, brands that forum members use. He is pretty determined to swallow as much cost as he humanly can, again, with a view, slightly cynically, to putting the pressure on smaller distributor rivals who might not have the financial muscle to be able to do that. So we're going to see it's going to be very uneven with the best will in the world as to I don't think we're going to see a blanket X percent rise. I don't think it's going to work like that. It's going to be quite interesting. So, you know, we'll have to sort of, figuratively speaking, suck it and see.
Yeah, I guess our little area of the world as well, Ed, is more luxury goods. I mean, if you're talking about hi-fi and home cinema and AV in general, I mean, all these products are, to the vast majority of people, luxury goods. And that's the first area that suffers when things get tight and people, you know, are looking after their pennies. It might be one of those times where it really sort of becomes dog-eat-dog. And when we get to the end of this, it'll be interesting to see who's standing and who's disappeared.
I'm just wondering whether China will be coming with a free trade deal anytime soon. I can see them seeing this as a good opportunity to get, you know, even more of their goods into the UK.
Well, they can't do anything until Article 50 is invoked.
Oh, really?
Right. I don't think they can do anything until after we've actually physically left.
Yeah, this is all where it gets. This is essentially the killer in all of these situations is uncertainty.
Yeah.
And uncertainty is what you get when everyone is milling around. And you know, it comes back to the clear sort of issue that Article 50 appears to have been written in a very short space of time with a view to it just being boilerplate, that it would never be used. And that's interesting because we're going to try and use it.
Again, there's a lot of doom and gloom as well, isn't there, Steve, around this whole leaving the EU and all the rest of it. But actually, there's a great deal of positivity that could come out of this in terms of, you know, you look at European companies and countries, and how many actually trade with the UK and how many actually rely on the UK for trade. If it's negotiated well, we could actually be in a lot stronger position than if we stayed in.
It's good job Boris Johnson's in charge of that then, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say theoretically, but look who's negotiating on our behalf. I mean, at least now, hopefully, Parliament will be involved in the process. And like you said at the beginning, no MP is going to vote against the will of the British people, even the British people are idiots. But they can at least have some sort of oversight on what we actually agree. Because ultimately, the original referendum was a question of, do you want to stay in the European Union? There was nothing addressed exactly how you go about doing that. And since no one had an idea how to do that, as Ed just said, Article 50 was put together pretty rapidly in the assumption no one would ever be stupid enough to want to leave. And therefore, no one's got a clue how to do this. And so I think having Parliament involved means that we hopefully can find a way out of this mess with, you know, with something in it for us, because
I mean, talking about negativity,
at the moment,
talking about negativity, your whole reply there is so negative, Steve. So negative. British people are stupid.
I have absolutely no faith in our government or our civil service or anybody negotiating anything. I don't trust the European Union, who undoubtedly, some of them will take this as an opportunity to punish us for being so stupid in the first place. And if you think the Chinese are going to come in and rescue us, trust me, they won't do anything unless it's in their benefit and there'll be strings attached. So we are royally buggered for the next 20 years. And if the US votes Trump in next week, I'm leaving the planet. Is there any missions going to Mars anytime soon?
Right. Shush. Leave it, Cassandra. There are some other dates. If we're going to do this properly, there are some other dates that matter. Obviously, we have the government's appeal against yesterday's ruling, which is December the 7th. It doesn't, to be honest, odds are it doesn't look like that's going to be successful. But nonetheless, that's a delay point up until that point. The other one for keen doom mongers' diaries is December the 4th, which is this constitutional vote in Italy. And you think, well, what the hell's that got to do with it? If, for whatever reason, the outcome of that is no, that throws a massive spanner in the works of how the Italian government and then the Italian government's ability to service the not inconsequential debts that Italy has. And that puts a lot of pressure on the EU itself. It certainly will take attention away from, you know, what Windy Island is up to in the north. So this is like Game of Thrones, but with more sort of grey people in suits.
Less bodies and knobs.
There's plenty of knobs. It happens at a it happens in multiple locations. It's all in real time, and every action has an outcome in different locations. So it's not us versus them. It's simply not. It's not as simple as that, and it's never been as simple as that. So, if you can stomach it, or if you've got enough alcohol in the house, keep an eye on the news and see where it goes from there. And there's still many, many turns to take in this particular. And also, Greece is due more debt relief before the end of the year, which has to be signed off on, negotiated and agreed. So, yeah, it's all to play for.
Yeah, and somewhere in there we discussed hi-fi in home cinema.
Hi-fi kit's getting more expensive. Unless you're a British manufacturer, in which case presumably exports should benefit from the tumbling pounds.
Yeah,
there are one or two owners of British hi-fi companies, I won't name them, who voted for Brexit for this specific reason, but we'll wait to see if that comes back to bite them on the arse.
Well, again, though, the export thing, it can only be short-term if the currency doesn't recover. It's only a short-term gain, so you know, make the most of it while you can. Because
what will actually happen is that we're obviously going to experience an increased amount of inflation next year. I think that's a given. And then in response to that, the Bank of England will raise interest rates, which will obviously benefit the pound, and it will strengthen again. I mean, that's how these markets work. But I think what markets hate more than anything else is uncertainty, and we've got a lot of that to look forward to, as Ed's just pointed out.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is, with greater scrutiny, we'll show our hand as well. So, you know, that could backfire as well now.
I mean, Merry Christmas, everyone.
And a Happy New Year.
Right, okay, I think we need to move this one on, because we were supposed to be talking about Hi-Fi and Home Cinema in there, and it ended up being the AV Forum's politics show, which was completely unbiased.
Well, actually, Ed
was.
Ed was unbiased, yeah. Steve was just, you know.
Grumpy old man.
Right, let's move on and hear Steve's dulcet tones yet again. What are high frame rates and why are they important? Well, they're not important if it comes to film, but I'll let Steve explain that one.
Yeah, high frame rates. So there are two very distinct aspects to this. One relates to film, as in the cinema, and the other one relates to TV and specifically broadcast frame rates. So in the cinema, traditionally, since introduction of sound in 1927, film's been shot at 24 frames a second. And that's been used almost exclusively right through from the 20s until, well, really until, and there's been a few minor experiments in the past, but basically the first real attempt to increase that frame rate to something higher was The Hobbit, which came, The Unexpected Journey came out in, I think it was 2012, and famously Peter Jackson shot the film at 48 frames a second. So he doubled the frame rate. Now, he did that specifically because he was shooting in 3D, and he felt the higher frame rate gave you better motion handling and made it look more realistic and more immersive. Now, of course, those of us who saw it, and I know opinion is very much divided on the subject, but certainly the majority of people, and certainly anyone who knows anything about film or film critics and film fans, absolutely hated the look of The Hobbit in 48 frames a second, because it made it look like cheap video. And it just made the sets look fake and everything just didn't feel right. And yeah, I know I'm not the only one who thinks that. I know you've seen it in 48 frames a second, Phil, haven't you? Mark, did you see it in 48 frames a second?
No.
Ed?
No, I haven't seen the film.
Okay. Right, over to
I've
Phil.
Seen the film.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Steve says, I think the thing that killed it for me was obviously the slow start to that film where they're all inside the house and they all start singing and all the rest of it. And the way that was shot and then shown in high frame rate, it felt like you were watching a stage play. It felt really weird. It didn't suck you in. The acting felt really bad, really wooden. And yet when I watched that same scene in 24 frames per second, it looked completely different and it felt completely different. And, you know, it's more than just how many frames it is. It's the whole feel. It's, again, I use the analogy projected image against a TV image. You know, there's something just more cinematic and different to a projected image than watching the same image on a really bright TV. With high frame rate, it's kind of like that. It's for it to look like film, it has to run at 24 frames a second. Anything more than that, and I'm really sensitive to it, and I can tell if frame interpolation's on within an instant, because even if it's on low, because you get used to how 24 frames or 25 frames looks, and there's not a great difference between 24 and 25 frames, apart from the 4% speed up. For film. So yeah, when it comes to film and you want it to look like film, it, even shot digitally, and this is the important thing, the whole film industry and everybody involved in making films apart from the odd one person like James Cameron or Peter Jackson, the rest of the industry do not like high frame rate and have never been complimentary of it. So that's the main issue for people that want higher frame rates. It ain't going to happen when it comes to films, because the film industry, you take away too much, basically. And even if you shoot in digital, they're still shooting at 24 frames.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, after The Hobbit the first Hobbit film came out, the second and third films were actually shown at 40 frames a second, but it was not really advertised. It was a very minor aspect, and it was quietly brushed under the carpet because it had been such a failure the first time around. Most recently, and it hasn't quite come out yet, but it's about to come out, is Ang Lee's new film, The Long Halftime Walk of Billy Flynn, which he shot at 120 frames a second at 4K in 3D. Trying to create a very, and particularly he wanted to use the high frame rate and everything in the battle sequences in Iraq to create a very immersive, very realistic experience. And from having read advanced, you know, critics, advanced screenings, the opinion is very, very much the same. It's essentially doesn't look like film anymore and therefore takes people out of the experience. So whilst, as you said, Phil, there have been some directors, like Cameron's talking about shooting the Avatar sequels in at a higher frame rate, I think generally the film industry, and also film fans and film critics, they just like the look of film. Whether people, you know, I know some people will complain about Judd, and they'll complain about, you know, motion handling, and they'll say, oh, why are we sticking with an old format from nearly 100 years ago? But it's a look, in the same way that people will add film grain to digitally shot movies because it makes it look like film. You want that cinematic filmic look. Now, and I think the opinion definitely falls between older people or people who are film fans and younger people or people who maybe who grew up playing a lot of video games at higher frame rates who like the smooth motion. But I think you're right. I think generally, in the cinema at least, it's going to be a long, long time, if ever, before Hollywood and the film industry really wants to move to a higher frame rate.
Yeah, and it's an artistic choice as well. I have nothing against video productions using high frame rate because video is video, and I myself have experimented with how we do our videos from CES and so on, and I've used higher frame rates because it makes things look smoother, it makes things look more detailed, and it makes things look better. It's video, it's not film. I'm not trying to be artistic. I'm not trying to create a world for us to visit so we can tell a story and all the rest of it. It's video, it's real, and it needs to look real. The same as sports and material like that. Ain't got a problem with high frame rate. In fact, I think high frame rate really works.
Yeah, I mean, just to draw an example, we were talking about earlier at the start of the show, if we can call it a show. I watched the World Series a couple of nights this week, as long as I could stay awake anyway. I was watching an American broadcast, and it was at 60 frames per second, and it looks so good, it's so smooth. And then compare that to, I don't know, Match of the Day, which is broadcast at 25 frames per second and never looks good, never ever looks good. So yeah, it makes a massive difference. Even at 60, you're seeing a huge improvement when you're watching sports. And if you take it up to 100, 120, it's going to look brilliant.
Yeah, when it comes to cinema, I think high frame rates are bust. When it comes to broadcast television and specifically things like it, Phil's just mentioned documentaries, wildlife documentaries and sports broadcasting, it's going to be, if you'll pardon the pun, a real game changer. There's no question that just moving to 50 in this country, 50p or 60p in the States will make a massive difference. And there is, you know, obviously within the specs and standards that are being agreed, they're looking at moving to 100 and 120p. And having seen demonstrations of sporting events like the French Open at 100p, 100 frames a second, it looked amazing. It looked absolutely amazing. And I can really, I mean, absolutely, it's going to be a real game changer in terms of sports broadcasting. And the real question then becomes whether they do 50 or 100 and how they deliver it. And obviously, what we're going on to here is that the manufacturers are having to obviously build new panels that can actually accept 100 or 120p signal.
Never. That doesn't mean that we need to go and buy more TVs, does it, Steve?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out. I think initially it's going to be 50-60p because the TVs can accept that already.
I guess the cynic Steve would say that, you know, all these manufacturers, TV companies, film studios and all the rest of it, they could have sat down back in 2010 or 2012 and said, right, this is what we're going to do, this is how we do it, and let's build the technology now so it's ready in 2 years, and then that's it, it's out there and it's done. That's what a cynic would say. The world doesn't work like that. And sadly, yeah, these things are drip fed. And it's going to be the case over the next few years that you're going to get HLG, you know, hybrid log gamma. You're going to get more advanced HDR. You're going to get higher frame rates. These things are going to keep changing. So you're going to if you want this technology, you're going to have to renew your TV far more than you did in the past.
Yeah, I mean, we went through a period where television essentially was unchanged for decades. I'd say, when was the last? I mean, once, certainly we had standard def. We moved into high def But really, the standards essentially haven't changed at all, other than the resolution. Everything else, the frame rate, the delivery method, the sound, and the color space, and all these kind of things have essentially been the same. So, but we are now in a period where things are changing very fast. And yes, in an ideal world, you'd want everyone to sit down and agree all this in advance and then release it in one go. But as I think we've established earlier in this podcast, we do not live in an ideal world. And technology can't just be, you know, created out of thin air. It has to be developed. It takes time. Some things are quicker than others. So clearly, delivering a higher resolution panel was a lot easier than, say, delivering a panel with a wider color space, or delivering a panel with a much brighter peak luminance, or I guess delivering a panel that can accept 100 or 120p source. So these things are going to take time. I mean, a lot of this is laid out in the recommendations. If you look at things like RET 2020 and RET 2100, that's all there. You know, they've laid out this path ahead of us, and we know where we're going to end up, but it's going to take time to get there. And unfortunately, it just means as a TV buyer, you're going to have to either accept the fact that your TV is a bit behind for a bit and then update later, or update more regularly. And I suppose that's good for the TV industry and manufacturers in terms of sales, but not so good for the consumer. I think our end game, though, if you mind another pun, but if we get to the end of this, what we're looking at is broadcast television. It's going to be a quantum leap beyond what we've experienced in the past. When you think about 4K and much wider color space and 10-bit and 100 frames a second and HLG added in there, so you've got high dynamic range. The actual results of all this are going to be an amazing experience. And I know that the BBC's plugging Planet Earth 2 at the moment, which we'd mentioned last week, because we're talking about the iPlayer and 4K. You know, and looking at the way that was created and shot, I mean, maybe not right now, but at some point that's going to look jaw-droppingly good, isn't it? When the technology catches up with the production.
Yeah, that's if we don't have World War III and things go to hell, like we've already mentioned at the beginning of the podcast.
And we won't be able to afford anything anyway.
Yeah, we'll all be poor and desolate. And we'll be back to Rec 7 or 9, Steve. That'll be it. Yeah. That'll be as far as it ever goes. Right, so we need to move things along swiftly. So that's the future, but the future can't exist without the past, Ed. And you are a big proponent of using 8-year-old technology when it comes to vinyl, but there's another older technology making a comeback.
Yeah, well, arguably this one's already made its comeback. It's carved its niche back into the industry, and it's existing very happily in that. I'm referring to valve amplifiers. I reviewed the Stelges MH30 amplifier a little bit of time ago, and they described that as a valve amplifier. It wasn't. It isn't really. It has a solitary valve. Otherwise, it's a pretty much a normal solid state amplifier. So, ever want to give you guys a bit of variety, I have actually gone and reviewed a valve amplifier. But this is AV Forums. You know, I'm not really pointlessly dogmatic most of the time. So it's actually a very clever valve amplifier. It's from Quad, who are one of the, you know, they're the elder statesmen of the British audio industry. They've been going since the 50s. And it is an integrated valve amplifier that just happens to have high-res USB, coaxial and optical inputs, as well as a standard analog line input. And it's a bit of an odd one, really, because I had considered valve amps a little bit along the same lines as vinyl. There's an undoubted appeal, but there are some massive impracticalities to it as well. I have to admit that wasn't quite the response I got from reviewing the Quad, because if you don't need an enormous amount of power, that is to say you're either in a relatively sensibly sized room and you have fairly sensitive loudspeakers, this wasn't a good valve amplifier. It's a really, really, really good £1,300 amplifier. It sounds fantastic. The feature set is very, very useful. It's beautifully made and it's nice and compact. And this sort of got me thinking, and the sort of overarching question I have for people listening is, if you were shopping for an amplifier with you had a specific set of requirements, and it transpired that the best fit just happened to be a valve amplifier, would you have a mental stumbling block in selecting such a thing? Because, you know, it looks a bit odd. There are some caveats. They do run hot. It is relatively easy to kill them in comparison to a normal solid state device. But if you heard it and you thought, oh, hang on a second, that's in my budget, it does what I need it to do, and it sounds fantastic, would you go, yeah, in for a penny, in for a pound, and buy a valve amplifier? Or would you just go, that's just mad, and stay away from it?
I think, don't know. I quite like the appeal. I'm turning a little bit into a hipster these days, in the sense that I feel myself drawn to the past more than the future. Perhaps because the future is so bloody grim now that I actually feel myself going thinking, oh, maybe I want to get back into vinyl. Maybe I would like a nice valve amp. But in terms of performance, why would somebody think, if someone's looking to buy an amplifier right now, Ed, you know, thinking, do I get solid state, or do I get an integrated amp, or do I get a valve amp? You know, what would the benefits be of them going down the valve route, other than looking cool?
it does come down to distortion and how we as people respond to distortion. If you have a solid state amplifier and it begins to distort, it will generally do so in the first harmonic, which we as a species do not like. Things that are designed to grab our attention or warn us generally distort in the first harmonic. So it's not a pleasant effect. Valve amps are more prone to distortion than solid state amps, although I need to stress it's perfectly possible to design valve amplifiers which have very little in the way of distortion. Actually, this quad is a case in point. But when they do, they generally distort in the second harmonic, which we have nothing like the same problem with. Actually, we can find it quite a pleasant effect. So this is just another facet of the, do you want to hear what the sound engineer heard, or do you want something which is genuinely enjoyable, especially when listening to recordings that aren't necessarily that much cop? It's also important to stress that there's this sort of stereotype that valve amplifiers are all sort of cuddly and soft. They've got like lovely big mid-range, but they're a bit sort of lacking at either frequency extreme. This is only the case if you don't specify them correctly. It comes down to the output transformer arrangement, behind the valves themselves. If you've got decent output transformers, I can assure you that valves can sound incredibly dynamic. And you know, the sort of ultimate expression of this, where you've got very, very high sensitivity loudspeakers and single-ended amplifiers, which, you know, generally speaking, have very low outputs, but they're working in their relatively limited performance envelope properly. They can sound astonishingly vibrant. So it comes down to, you know, being whether you're willing to then start making the sacrifices that in turn requires, because very sensitive loudspeakers are generally quite large loudspeakers, and single-ended amplifiers are generally quite sort of bulky, heavy and hot themselves. But the performance, it's important to stress that when we moved away from horn loudspeakers and things like that, we weren't doing it because conventional driver speakers sounded better. It was simply that normal people could fit them in their houses. So this is not necessarily the same argument as vinyl, where there's much more of a sentimentality thing about it. If you are willing to throw substantial sums at the problem, a low output, high sensitivity system is, you know, still capable of absolute reference level performance, and with you know, distortion performance and general sort of measurement, which is well and truly in keeping with what we would expect from the very best of solid state technology. It's a bit of an oddity. It's a question of whether you as a consumer are willing to make some of those slight sort of space and decor sacrifices for something which goes about its business in a different way, but it can be a genuinely impressive way.
What kind of damage is it going to do to my electricity bill and the planet?
Well, this is an interesting one. I've got a smart meter, but I'm afraid I'm not in the position to turn absolutely everything else off to see what's going on. The quad is a small valve amplifier. It uses EL84 valves. When it was up and running, doing normal sort of listening levels, I don't think it was consuming substantially more electricity than either my name integrated amplifier, which is commensurately more powerful, and certainly no more than my AV receiver. So, but equally, if you go and buy something with whopping valves in it, you know, like sort of 845s, which look like Hammer horror props, you're going to notice that. A friend of mine has an 845 valve amplifier, and he has actually over the years realized subconsciously he doesn't listen to his hi-fi system in the summer because it heats the room up so much.
I was just going
to
say how much
heat. It's just not a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
So he actually goes off and does photography and all sorts of other things in the summer. It's like when the temperature starts to drop, it's like, I'll start listening to some music again.
That's the same with projector owners, really. I mean, I'm the same. Come the summer, you know, trying to watch a movie in the home cinema room where the projector's pumping out hot air and it's already warm, and it's just a nightmare. Absolute nightmare. Especially you've got leather seats and you just start sticking to them.
My house is always cold, so any additional source of warmth is welcome. I'm telling
you. Yes.
We can come down and firebomb it if you like.
I think after this podcast, it's probably guaranteed to happen later in the week.
Have a read, and when you think, well, would I be prepared to go for that, or is it just a bit too left field? I'd be genuinely interested, not least because, as with all of these things, it shapes the sort of products that we look at, or that I look at in the future as well.
And how many of our worthless pounds will it take to buy one?
It's 1,300 worthless pounds.
Okay.
It looks like...
it was last week.
Go on, Mark.
That quality looks like you've got salt and pepper pops in a cage on top of a box.
It's not a looker, Ed, I've got to say. Well, it's the eye of the beholder, but...
It looks like a quad. If you look at quad products since year dot, that's what they look like. They're not going to mess up. Quad do some interesting styling with their solid state things, but quad valve amplifiers look like quad valve amplifiers. It's the rules. It ain't broke, so they don't fix it. I do agree with you that the Lancaster Grey, that's what they call it, I don't think that's as nice as the old pearlescent finish which they used to use. I think that used to be really quite pretty, but I think it was also heartbreakingly expensive, so it's had to go by the wayside. But honestly, if you can get a listen to it, it's sensational.
So really it's a product for somebody who's old and losing their eyesight?
Well, you know, that's quite
with,
a
with
of
their slippers and
industry.
smoking jacket. And nice
it's warm. Not a pipe and slippers sound. Trust me on this. It will come down to having relatively sensitive speakers, but relatively sensitive speakers are not too difficult to accrue these days. We've gone through a phase of designing everything to take a million watts, and we've sort of come out the other side of that. So, you know, it wouldn't be too hard to find speakers in budget that would work perfectly well with it.
Okay. We're going to move things on. We're going to talk about upcoming reviews at the end of the podcast. So stay tuned if you want to know what's coming up later this month, because it is the beginning of a new month. But next, it's movie news. So Steve, what's at the cinema?
Well, I was mentioning hoping there'd be an alien invasion next week to save us from all the catastrophe on Earth, and we're going to get one on Thursday, the 10th. Arrival opens, which I've got to say, I'm really looking forward to. I don't know, has anybody else seen the trailers?
Yeah, I like the look of that a lot.
It looks good, doesn't it? They haven't given away much in the trailers. It's really piqued my interest. Basically, a series of ships arrive on Earth, and they bring in linguistics experts to try and communicate with them. So it's kind of got a bit of a Close Encounters vibe to it, but it's got very much a modern take on it. It looks gorgeous. The photography, the look of the film looks stunning. And it's got an interesting cast. It's got Amy Adams, it's got Forest Whitaker, it's got Jeremy Renner. And it's directed by Denis Villeneuve, I think his name is, who made the superb Sicario and the very good, I really enjoyed Prisoners as well. And he's currently directing the sequel to Blade Runner. And I'm really looking forward to this. I've read good things about it. So there's been some advanced reviews that were very positive. And I think it looks interesting, it looks different. I'm really looking forward to it. That's on Thursday that opens, Arrival. And then on Friday, a small British film, which Sharuna has already reviewed because she went to an advanced press screening, called Panic, which I'm not giving too much away here too, but it's basically a modern take on Rear Window. And she thought it was excellent. She really, really enjoyed it. So two very promising films opening this week, both of which I'm very keen to see. But I'm definitely going to go and see Arrival on Thursday night, so I'll talk about it on the podcast recording next Friday. And if I get a chance, I'll also check out Panic. So please go and see them. I think we've got a couple of decent films out for once this week. I mean, after a whole slew of animated movies and comic book movies and things like that, I think we've got a couple of decent films on the way. So, excellent news.
Okay, so talking about comic book movies and action heroes and other, what's coming out on Blu-ray?
Right, on Blu-ray this week we've got X-Men Apocalypse, which I've already reviewed the Ultra HD Blu-ray release of because it came out in the States a bit earlier. It's out today on Ultra HD Blu-ray, Blu-ray and DVD. And disappointing. I thought that Matthew Vaughn did a great job rebooting the franchise with X-Men First Class. I thought original director Bryan Singer did a great job coming back into it again to make Days of Future Past, which I thought was a really good film. So there was a lot of high expectations for this movie. Bryan Singer again directing, following on with the First Class cast into a new film set in the 80s, but really disappointing. Obviously, I reviewed it at the cinema when it came out, and it just seems to forget all the things that were learned previously and ends up being a miscast, very poor villain, usual conclusion with mass city destruction. It was boring and trite. And, and it what happened?
you've turned into a Dalek. Say exterminate.
Exterminate. Don't drop me and bring it back.
Best ad.
How about now? Do I sound any better?
Yeah, that's better.
Right. Trite, boring, and frankly, it felt lazy and smug. I think was the word I would use. It just felt smug to me, and I didn't enjoy it at all. So wouldn't recommend it. Although, sadly, the Ultra HD Blu-ray looks spectacular. So if you want a genuine 4K DI, Dolby Atmos sound, looks and sounds superb. That is a disc to get, but the film itself is not great, unfortunately. Also this week, we've got Now You See Me 2. Again, that's getting a Blu-ray, an Ultra HD Blu-ray release. And I saw that at cinema and thoroughly enjoyed it. It's basically a follow-on to the Now You See Me, obviously, which was about a bunch of magicians basically committing crimes for the good of, in an altruistic manner. And this kind of follows on with the same lots of... actually, I think more genuine magic in this than there was in the previous film, less science fiction-y. And I really enjoyed it. It's got some new additions to the cast, particularly... it's got Daniel Radcliffe in quite a funny role. If you enjoyed the first one, I think you'll enjoy the second film. So worth checking out if you like that. We've also got Batman, Return of the Caped Crusaders, which Kaz has just reviewed. And this is an animated film based on the 60s TV series, including the voices of Burt Ward and Adam West, as well as Julie Newmar, who voiced Catwoman. And apparently, according to Kaz, it's excellent. It kind of plays on, it does pay homage to the 60s series, but at the same time pokes fun at it, but in a loving way. And it was really funny and really well done. So if you're a fan of that, that's available. And that's also running as a competition at the moment. So so worth entering if you like that. And we've got Family Guy season 16. Has it really been 16 years of Family Guy? And I have not seen Family Guy for a couple of years because I keep forgetting it's moved to ITV. The last series that I saw actually wasn't too bad. I think they were kind of floundering a little bit, but they seem to find their stride again. And,
I've got to say, Family Guy has been consistently funny through the years, whereas The Simpsons, you get to season 7, season 8, and then it really sort of dies off and just doesn't recover from that point onwards. Whereas, Family Guy, it's had a couple of weak seasons, but not as weak as The Simpsons from season 7 onwards. I think consistently it's remained good quality and funny.
Ironically, I would say in defence of The Simpsons, it's better now than it has been. It had a real low point. I would argue that actually they've done some better episodes in recent history than they were doing sort of 8 or 9 years ago, which is a bit of a weird one. It's a sort of second renaissance. I think what helps Family Guy is that with Seth MacFarlane also doing American Dad, and then there was also the Cleveland Show, which was TOS and cancelled. It means that there's, if he needs to take some time out, there are other things he can crack on with, and focus on and do other things with. That
his really successful film career.
Well, there's that as well. Yes,
Although Ted was good.
No, Ted was good, really good. Ted was very successful. But since then, it's not so much.
No, not so much. Hey, I love Seth MacFarlane. I think he's super. Great. He's brilliant. Really, really funny guy. Great singer as well, Ed. Really good singer.
Oh yeah, and his sister is no slouch in this regard as well. because she does the voice of Hayley Smith, and she's done an album of stuff, and she can really sing as well. So they're clearly a very musical family.
And he's an atheist, which is always good news to me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so found you guys out. It's also a competition prize as well. So enter that.
Just talking about animated stuff and you know, series that have been running a long time. The other one, South Park. I think we discussed this a few weeks ago, Ed, and I think you were the only one on the podcast who had kept up with it. Well, obviously I got Now TV, so I could watch Westworld. So I dipped into the latest series. I have to say, I think it was the second or maybe third episode when they block out the ID channel, Investigation Discovery channel and that kind of thing, because of the, you know, the parents getting out, because it's all soft porn basically and all that. So the kids get this app that blocks it. And when they go and speak to the cable company, and the way that the sales guy goes on with the cable company and then the manager and so on, I'm not going to spoil it for people, but I was on the floor in tears laughing at that. It was so, so funny. I'm five into it, and I am sore from laughing. It's really back on form, I think.
The latest series, latest season, dealing with online abuse and stuff like that, it's, some of it is just so beautifully observed. And last season's one, taking on the construct of social justice as it exists in 2016, with PC Principle and singing about safe spaces. Again, the thing is that it's beautifully barbed, but it's beautifully barbed against everybody. It takes satire in its most classic form, where it's truth to all parties. It's not sitting on one side of the fence, and it's very wrong to think that it does. It points out the logical absurdities in everyone's positions. And again, what's really, really helped South Park is the extraordinarily quick turnaround. Because it's now essentially all computer rendered, which is ironic considering it still looks like TOS. Something happens on the Monday. By the following Wednesday, they can have a South Park episode that references it and makes use of it, and that's been a huge help to keeping it right. And it must be said, there's another two guys who are extraordinarily musically talented as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the original South Park movie is still one of the greatest film musicals of all time.
Yeah, I absolutely love that.
Different songs, and I mean, obviously, I've not got around to it because the tickets are breathtakingly hard to come by, but the Book of Mormon is supposed to be extraordinarily, once again, it's very, very funny, but musically it's a serious piece of work. So, you know,
yeah, they are very, very clever. They're a very, very clever partnership, and like you say, everything is so well observed.
Yes.
Which allows South Park to go places that other people just wouldn't dare to go. Yeah, you know, they do. I don't know if you saw the latest publicity stunt that they did, but for this latest series, but they dropped billboards and stuff round about people who they had already taken the mickey out of. So outside the White House for Obama and Donald Trump and so on and so forth. It was really quite funny. Another series that's back on form, and I highly recommend, as long as you're not easily offended.
Well, if you are, bollocks to you. I'm sorry that we exist in the world of the perpetually offended now, and there is nothing you can do that will not offend somebody somewhere. So the lesson to this is, you go about doing what you need to do, on the understanding that if you are seeking to be overtly offensive, then you deal with the consequences yourself. And people will need to self-regulate. You know, this whole business of trigger warnings. Get to fuck.
Yes, that's it. That's the answer. They can all just basically.
It's the bleep machine's going to be Billy working overtime.
It's, as I say, unfortunately, it doesn't matter how much ground you give, it will never be enough.
If you haven't seen the cable company salesman yet rubbing his nipples, that is just absolutely
I shall be watching
brilliant.
It over the weekend. Thank you for the recommendation, Phil. Speaking of watching things, then, did you catch up with Westworld?
Not yet.
Come on.
Because I'll tell you what, it's getting really good.
Interesting questions.
I did go in and I just checked when it would be withdrawn. So it's not withdrawn until the 5th of January. So it's there till the 5th of January. So I intend to take the box through to the cinema room and watch it on the big screen. That's
all 10, I suppose, if you wait another 5 weeks.
That'd be filthy. And obviously, new Wheeler Dealers kicks off Monday.
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me of that, Ed.
You mean
tonight?
No. Oh, yeah, sorry. Oh.
So last night it was Planet Earth 2, and also, doesn't MasterChef the Professional start this week?
Yes, that starts tomorrow, if you're listening to this. And I am the excite. I mean, Planet Earth, yeah, it's great. I'll go outside and have a look at that. It's fine. MasterChef the Professionals. And as I say, I've also, my Sunday night, I won't watch. I will be doing another episode of The Young Pope, which I haven't decided yet whether it's awful or brilliant. It could really be either of them. I'm not 100% sure yet, but my wife has refused to watch any more of them. So she's out on Sunday night and I will watch more Young Pope. I thought also, Phil, I thought last Monday's air crash investigation was quite interesting. It's one of those ones where one washer completely bollocks, the lack thereof completely bollocks the plane.
Yeah, but it just shows you know, one
that's,
small...
That's comforting to know.
Six cents it cost for a washer, and it brought down a $70 million jet.
The thing is, Steve, that they have at least identified it and corrected it. And it's quite good news because it was a 737, and there's quite a lot of those. You've got a reasonable chance of flying on them. But yes, if you didn't put one washer back in the right place, part of the flap assembly would fall out and then puncture the fuel tank, which I thought was a nice touch. You know, so...
Yeah. Amazing video though, to watch the actual video of the accident happening. That was something else. Watching,
I'll tell you what, that coat, the first officer must be actually one of a mutant in disguise, because the plane explodes as he's roping down from the cockpit, and he must drop 25, 30 feet onto concrete. He bounces and runs off without a scratch on him.
The plane was stationary at the time.
Yeah.
How does he rope out of a plane that's flying? And
No. It was on the ground. They'd actually parked up and switched all the engines off, and then it burst into flames. So, mm-hmm. But you have to watch it to find out how it did that and why it did that. Yeah. And that's what makes the programme interesting, Steve.
And then, obviously, for people who really do enjoy shite on reality television, Street Outlaws kicked off again last night as well. So that would have been on Thursday night. So yeah, I mean, that's moronic, but it's quite fun. So.
I have to say, I've never watched it. Has anybody watched Still Game yet?
No.
I've forgotten about it.
Jesus, best thing on TV at the minute. Forget your Westworld. You want Jack and Victor and the gang. That's what you need.
It'll be on iPlayer, won't it?
Yes, it's well worth watching. It's very, very funny.
Watch that programme on hipsters last night on BBC
Yep,
4?
Yeah, I did. It was very good.
With some tips.
Well, the most interesting is, obviously, it's a cultural movement to which no one wishes to identify.
Yep.
I was watching elements of it and I was going, yeah.
What I found interesting was, Ed, is that most cultural movements, most youth movements, should we say, of the past have generated something useful musically, whereas... I'm struggling to think of anything that the hipster movement's generated in terms of music that I would want to listen to. I mean, I appreciate the craft beers, and I appreciate the quality foods, and I appreciate the good coffee. Excellent. I'm not so interested in the beards. The whole vinyl thing's obviously annoying you, but it's had a positive impact generally, I think, for
vinyl fans. Well, actually, the consumption of music, they have had a lasting effect on that, because, again, in the way of creating something and owning the process. I'm not saying that everyone that uses the Bandcamp website is a hipster. That would be ridiculous. But there is, once again, this, I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to do it properly. And you actually listen to material on Bandcamp, and again, it's properly mastered. It has dynamic range, and people are paying attention to their recordings, and they're self-pressing. I mean, I've bought two or three albums where the band has essentially self-pressed them. And again, they've done it really, really well. If you're looking for the sound, I don't know if there is one. But it's still, and it's not just vinyl. And as I say, it's very important. Again, it's taking ownership of the process and doing it in an artisanal way. and I don't have a problem with that at all. I mean, Bandcamp is still a bit of an oddity, but it is unquestionably, to me, the future of how artists go about getting their material out to a wider audience.
Sorry, Ed, every time you say Bandcamp, all I'm hearing in my head is this
it's
one
Alison
time.
It's Alison Hannigan.
At Bandcamp. Yeah,
that's because you're a disgusting old man.
I kind of really enjoyed the bit where, because obviously the whole thing about hipsters are, you know, meant to be authentic, and you're going back to the, you know, the original way that the beer was brewed, all this sort of stuff, or coffee's made, and this guy's shipping in his coffee and you're getting it within 10 days of being picked from the bush. And there was these two guys making chocolate, so they were sailing down to the Dominican Republic and sailing back with their cocoa beans and making this chocolate. And it was revealed later that they'd been using, like, you know, dairy milk in it or something like that.
It's not so, just actually it's even better than that. They made a name for themselves with really quite pleasant tasting chocolate, which it transpires was being bought in. Now yeah. They do absolutely everything they say they do. The general consensus is it doesn't taste anywhere near as nice.
And it's like £2 of chocolate.
It's ridiculously expensive. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, that's just pointless. But I think we all have our mental sort of stumbling blocks. A lovely little touch in this program was the chap, the narrator had traveled to New York, and he's just randomly talking to this bloke on a street about trying to find an original source, sort of 2000 vintage hipsters. And they were in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. And the bloke he was talking to was wearing a US Army Air Force aviator's jacket. And it did look to be a real one. And they are, well, if you have a look on, you know, various websites and eBay, tatty ones are £1,000. And the bloke's one wasn't tatty. It was actually in really quite nice nick. So he was sort of wearing a sort of £3,000 jacket. It's like, I think you might be part of the source, to be honest. But yeah. I thought it was a really good program. I really enjoyed it. Really good. You know, and I'm comfortable in that. My wife objects vehemently to being identified in any way, shape or form as having similar tendencies, despite the fact that she works in a sort of exposed brick conservatory playing the harp and doing all sorts of other vaguely artisanal sort of processes. But I'm in a good place with it. You call me what you bloody like. You know, hipster is by far and away not the worst.
Laura's always banging on about hipsters this and hipsters that, but when it comes to food, she's a total hipster. So, and I love coffee, so I'd be a hipster when it comes to coffee. So whatever.
I don't know. The thing is that I often have people say, oh, you know, this is a single source and all the rest of it. And sometimes it's excellent. Other times it's like, do you know what? I would rather have a decently prepared cup of coffee made using Lavazza.
That is what I mainly use. Yeah, Lavazza espresso.
So, there are certain people that can do it brilliantly. And let's face it, there are great craft breweries and there are people turning out absolute pish.
Right. We're getting too middle class now. We need to go and start talking about heroin junkies just to balance this up, you know, against...
Is it hipsters. Actually artisanal sourced organic heroin?
Has it got a journey and a story to it?
Yeah, do they have a relationship with the poppy farmer? Is it flower to needle in less than 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Do we get to know the person whose bottom it was up when it travelled into the country? These are important questions.
That takes us back to Mark's opening quote, doesn't it? Really quite nicely. It's almost like this is planned out.
I tell you what, if they ever legalise drugs, artisanal heroin, I am there. I don't mean I'm taking it. I mean I'm making it. I will be making small batch hipster opium. Well, and there'll be none of this injecting bollocks. You'll be using a pipe and lounging around on a beanbag in a full 19th century den sort of thing. You will be chasing that dragon.
I did say right at the top of the hour, you know, please, let's try and keep this as own message as we can this week, so it's a nice easy edit job for me and we can get it published.
Oh, come on, this is all staying in.
This is all gold.
we are obviously hinting at the new Trainspotting trailer. Danny Boyle is back, the whole cast are back, I mean the whole cast. Original cast are back for this one. The full trailer dropped last week, if you're listening to this on Monday. And I have to say, on first viewing, it left me cold. I was like, is this just for nostalgia's sake? You know, the whole Choose Life and then talking about Twitter and Instagram and so on. And after a couple of viewings, though, I'm really starting to get into it. I'm really starting to look forward to meeting the old characters again. I'm happy that everyone else has been involved again. I think it would be strange if he wasn't involved in terms of the story. It's loosely based on a novel that he'd already written. But all the old cast are back. I've got to say, Bobby Carlyle, in the first teaser, he looked really old. Thankfully, he doesn't look as bad in the full trailer. If you haven't seen it yet, go and watch it. Although, warning, it does have drug use in it. It does have
nudity
and so on in the trailer. So if you're offended by that kind of thing, like Ed said before, I'm not going to repeat what Ed said before. But yeah, for me, I'm actually starting to look forward to this, and I might use my multipass to go and see it.
Hey, well, so that's in January.
I'll believe it when you come back.
Well, that's January, so give us a setting, you know, give us a chance. I might have done too much socialising though at the beginning of the month with us being at CES. That I might be worn out and, you know, want to stay indoors for the next 6 months.
Yeah, possibly. I did enjoy the trailer. I've also become convinced that Johnny Lee Miller has a painting of himself in the attic that ages instead of him, because he appears to be exactly the same as he was 20 years ago.
Identical. Ewan McGregor has aged in as so much as that he's a bit rounder than he was in the face and so on. When you look at the old trailer, because I went back and looked at the old trailer to see, you know, if there was any differences to that and if there's any themes and so on. But yeah, I mean, Johnny Lee Miller hasn't aged a bit. And that opening shot as well of the trailer, that just looks utterly gorgeous. I mean, it's total, you know, it's a total dump that you're looking at night. It just looks gorgeous.
Johnny Miller is an absolute fitness freak, though. Obviously, he's New York-based for the most part because he's been involved in this Elementary Sherlock business for some years now. But he runs to set each morning, and it's not a small distance either. It's about 10 or 11 miles there, then acts and does all the work all day, and then runs home. He is in seriously, seriously good shape, and yeah, you know, fair play to him. It's paying off quite nicely.
Yeah, Ed Spud's back again, and you know, Ewan Bremer looking good.
Kelly MacDonald.
Kelly MacDonald's back as well. There's a new girl there who you see, but we're not introduced to, so we don't know who that is. But obviously, the love interest for Mark Renton. There's still the Hibs references in there, so I like that. There's a few Hibs tops turn up. So yeah, I mean, it looks very much like it's gonna be a nice 20-year reunion with the gang, and hopefully there's a decent story in there as well. I mean, the whole thing is, you know how it's all going to kick off, because if you've seen the first film, I'm not going to spoil, well, 20-year-old. do we spoil it? But obviously with the ending of the first film, with Renton disappearing with a huge amount of cash that was supposed to get shared amongst them all, and Begbie got locked up, and the others all went their separate ways. He has to come back and introduce himself again and say sorry. So this is going to be, I mean, the whole side of the film is going to be interesting to see how he gets around that. He's going to get his arse kicked, basically.
It was, I thought they did a brilliant job at the very first line of Sick Boy going, "Hello, Mark, where have you been for the last 20 years?" It's kind of summed up not only within the context of the film itself, but obviously the fact that the film was made 20 years ago. So
yeah, and he's not.
I'm looking forward to it.
He's not hanging on to that pool cue lightly either.
No.
That is going to get used.
Yeah, so I thought it was. I mean, I don't know if the speech bit that you hear in the trailer is necessarily going to be in the film. I mean, they may have done that for the trailer in order to, you know, sort of tie it.
From what I can make out, and I don't want to spoil this for people, so, you know, jump forward 30 seconds. But from what I can make out from the trailer, the way that he runs back into Spud is identical to the opening of the first film, when he's running along Princess Street being chased by somebody. Because if you look at the trailer, it's cut quite quickly. But if you catch up, he's running in exactly the same spot, and he runs past Spud, and he's being chased by a security guard. So I think the film's going to open the same way as the original film opened, with him running along Princess Street. So that'll be interesting if that is that. And the other thing is that Danny Boyle has a superb eye, and he just makes things look really beautiful. Even if it's complete devastation, it looks beautiful. And he makes Edinburgh look so cinematic.
There's lots for them to address in the film in terms of, you know, how different Edinburgh and the UK is in the last 20 years in terms of the quality of life, standard of living, what people do. Then you've got social media, you've got different kind of drugs being taken now. If it's done right, it could be a really interesting commentary on how things have changed in the last 20 years. As long as it's funny, basically.
Yeah, but if it comes
that'd
out
be the main thing.
If it comes out in January, though, we might all be, you know, World War III and all the rest of it. We might not get to see it.
I get that big meteor heading our way. We need Bruce Willis.
Edward, you're very
space shuttle quick.
Edward, you're very quiet on this.
Do you know what? I've only ever seen Trainspotting once, and it has to have been I was still at university, so it's pre-2002. I did watch the trailer, and then this could go either way. Do you know what? I probably won't go to the cinema to watch this one. Not going to the cinema to watch very much. But I will get around to watching. I mean, it's a cracking cast of people. They are an absolutely superb clutch of actors and actresses. So, you know, I think I have... I'm pretty sure it will be good. And there's not... It's not having sort of Indiana Jones-style problems. They're freely acknowledging that it's been 20 years and everyone's older and so on and so forth. And that hopefully will help. But yeah, I don't know. It looked quite good. I won't be going to the cinema.
One of the best cinema experiences I ever had was at the original. I went along to one of the premiere screenings when it opened in Edinburgh. Saw it a few weeks later in Cornwall. What a completely different experience it was seeing that
slightly
film.
Different audience.
just a bit, because obviously seeing it with a local audience in Edinburgh. There's those characters. You know, Francis Begbie. I had five or six or seven people who I used to work around and so on back in my hometown in Scotland who were Francis Begbie with the Pringle jumpers and the hard man attitude, and you know, you knew the characters and stuff. So it was so funny, and there were so many laughs at that premiere. Went to Cornwall and nobody was laughing at all at any of the right points. So it was a completely weird experience. I think I might go back to Edinburgh to watch this.
I watched Black Hawk Down in the Mile End Genesis in London. Oof. And it became abundantly clear that the vast majority of the people in the cinema weren't rooting for the Americans. It was really weird. Really very strange indeed.
So on that bombshell, that is it for the podcast this week. We're way over time. My thanks to Steve Withers.
Some hate the English. I don't. They're just wankers.
Mark Hodgkinson.
And once the pain goes away, that's when the real battle starts.
And Ed Selly.
Even drugs are changing. You can't stay in here all day dreaming about heroin and Ziggy Pop.
Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, bookmark AV Forums for latest reviews, news and video, and of course, leave those 5-star ratings on iTunes, but only if you enjoyed the show. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week.